So right here on this chart, on slide 13, you're going to have two test questions. And these two test questions come from the repetition range from maximal strength training and muscular endurance and stabilization training. So the test question might be, how many repetitions are appropriate for someone training in the maximal strength phase? Well, on this chart right here, it says 1 to 5. How many repetitions are required to train in the stabilization or phase 1 or phase 2? That's going to be 12 to 20. So those two are going to be extremely important to know for the test, but it's also great to know when programming what other types of repetitions are available for each phase. So phase 1, phase 2 on the chart, or muscular endurance and stabilization, 12 to 20 repetitions. Hypertrophy is going to be 6 to 12 repetitions, which is a little bit lower. Maximal strength is going to be 1 to 5 repetitions, and power is going to be 1 to 10 repetitions. And these are all specifically appropriate for the training goals that your clients have around these specific adaptations. So power, max strength, or strength in general, hypertrophy, muscular endurance, and stabilization. Know all the repetition ranges for those phases of training, phases 1 through 5. So clicking over to slide 14, the next acute variable is going to be sets. So sets are going to be groups of consecutive repetitions. Typically, most people think of, oh, I did, you know, 3 sets of 10 reps. That's the pretty basic in the sense of program design and understanding program design. That, you know, you just take your reps and you take your sets and do an exercise. But sets are going to be important because they are also going to assist in the determination of the total volume. All right, so the set factors are going to be the repetition number, the training intensity in which you train at, the number of exercises that you do, the training experience, and the recoverability. If you have a high number of repetitions, your sets are typically going to be a little bit lower. If you have a low number of repetitions, your sets might be a little bit higher. Same thing with training intensity. If your training intensity is super, super high, you might not have as many sets. If your training intensity is low, you might have more sets. So there's an inverse relationship among sets, repetitions, and intensity. All right, so clicking over to slide 15. So sets, fewer sets equals higher repetitions, lower intensity. Endurance and hypertrophy is going to have fewer sets. To avoid overtraining, a new client is encouraged to limit the total sets in a workout to 12 total sets. So that's going to be important when looking at a potential test question. So more sets means lower repetitions, higher intensity, which is something like strength and power, max strength and power. So looking at the chart below, it's important to know how many sets come from each phase. Specifically, as a test question, you might want to know, hey, what comes from muscular endurance and stabilization, or phase 1 and phase 2 training? How many sets should I perform? Anywhere from 1 to 3. And what you'll notice is that NASM likes to ask test questions about phase 1 and phase 2 because that's where you're typically beginning clients. And they want you to understand that typically almost all clients, unless they're extremely advanced, are going to be starting in phase 1 and phase 2. So as far as hypertrophy goes, you're going to have 3 to 5 sets. For maximal strength, you're going to have 4 to 6 sets. And then for power, you're going to have 3 to 6 sets. All right, so clicking over to slide 16. Training intensity. So training intensity is going to be the level of effort compared with a maximal effort. The way that NASA measures training intensity is going to be a percentage of one repetition maximum, or 1 RM. So training intensity is traditionally determined by the number of sets and repetitions performed, which is based on specific training goals. So muscular endurance and stabilization, it's going to be extremely important to understand the intensity that they recommend for phase 1 and phase 2. So 50 to 70% of one repetition maximum. There's one thing that I dislike about NASM's use of the 50 to 70% of 1 RM, or even just the judgment based off of the 1 RM. On a brand new client, you aren't going to be able to find out the client's 1 RM because it's not really safe to, you know, do a one repetition maximum on a bench press or one repetition maximum on a squat because their bodies might not be ready to lift, you know, a whole bunch of weight. So I'm not a huge fan of the percentage of 1 RM intensity reading, but it is important to know for the test on how to determine what types of weight you should use with your client. So phase 1, phase 2, 50 to 70% of 1 RM, important to know. Hypertrophy is going to be 75 to 85% of 1 RM. Maximal strength is going to be 85 to 100% of 1RM, and power is going to be 30 to 45% of 1RM, or basically just someone's 10% of someone's body weight, or something relatively light that you can throw fast. All right, clicking over to slide 17. Training intensity can also be improved by or increased by using an unstable environment or a multiplanar environment. So this is going to require increased levels of muscle activity based off of joint stabilization. Because of the increased stabilizing factor, that's going to increase the intensity. So a single leg squat is going to be a lot harder than a double leg squat, and that is a progression. So clicking over to slide 18, next we have repetition tempo. So with repetition tempo, it's going to be the speed at which each repetition is performed. So it can be manipulated to achieve specific training objectives, and a change in tempo can change the demand of the exercise. This is going to be important to know and understand because when you start out with new clients, are you going to have them go extremely, extremely fast? No, because you're going to want them to be able to build coordination and build stabilization by going slow and basically utilizing the stabilizing muscles to control their movements and make them a lot more balanced and efficient at the movement. So another great, great, great thing to know for the test is what is the repetition tempo for phase one and phase two, or muscular endurance and stabilization. And that's going to be slow, or what you should know is the second range. So 4, 2, and 1. And 4, 2, 1 specifically refers to eccentric, isometric, and concentric. So 4 seconds in a squat would look like 4 seconds moving down. So 1, 2, 3, 4. Then 2 seconds isometric, you're pausing at the bottom. 1, 2. And then you're going up in 1 second and 1, moving up. So that's what how you should look at the repetition tempo. Eccentric, isometric, concentric. And I want you guys to know specifically those numbers associated with each of the phases. So hypertrophy is going to be moderate, or 2, 0, 2. 2 seconds down in a squat, no pause, and 2 seconds up, so nice and controlled. Maximal strength, you're going as fast or as powerful as you can. And that's important to know because, you know, you aren't going to want a brand new client to go to an explosive tempo just yet. And you might run into clients that just want to go really, really fast, but it's important to get them to stabilize before they move on to any strength or power sort of movements. And then power obviously is going to be explosive because the whole point of power is to create force very fast. And that's explosive. Good, clicking over to slide 19. Repetition tempo, so repetition tempo, spectrum of muscle action. The repetition tempo has a significant impact on the functional outcome of the stressed tissue. By emphasizing eccentric and isometric muscle actions at slower velocities during the initial phases of training, more demand is placed on the connective tissue as well as preparing the nervous system for functional movements. This will increase coordination. That's the whole point of those beginning phases. You're teaching them how to move. Phase one, phase two. So teach them how to move in a slow, controlled way. And this is important to build the appropriate physiologic foundation for more specific forms of hypertrophy, strength, and power, which are going to be progressions. Good. So clicking over to slide 20, rest interval is next. So the time taken to recuperate in between sets or exercises, it's going to have a huge effect on the outcome of the training program, as a short rest is going to be a lot tougher than a longer rest. And the primary energy used during training depends on the training phase, intensity, and goal. Clicking over to slide 21. The whole point of the rest interval is to utilize different energy systems, okay? If you have a short rest period, you're typically going to be recovering using the oxidative phase, meaning that you're breathing heavy for a long period of time during the training program. Something like circuit training would emphasize a short rest period to keep the heart rate elevated and almost make it like a cardiovascular workout. For a heavier workout, like a max strength workout, if you rest 3 minutes, you're typically going to be focusing on just the ATP-PC phase, which is the adenosine triphosphate phosphocreatine phase, which utilizes about 6 to 10 seconds of really brief, high-intensity work with a long rest. Good, but so to read the first bullet point, the ability to replenish ATP and phosphocreatine supplies determines the rest interval. So it's crucial for optimal performance and the desired adaptation. Typically with a rest interval, if I have an athletic client, I'm going to mimic a rest interval similar to their sport. If it's a client, I'm typically going to keep the rest intervals a little bit shorter potentially to increase the cardiorespiratory demand and potentially burn more calories or utilize more energy. But by adjusting the rest interval, energy supplies can be regained according to the goal of the training program. 20 to 30 seconds utilizes approximately 50% of the recovery of the ATP-PC system. Okay, so a short rest period in that 20 to 30 seconds, which would be something like muscular endurance training or stability training, recovers only about 50% of the ATP-PC system. Then when you go to 40 seconds, you're going to get 75% of recovery, so just a little bit more. Then when you go to 60 seconds, you're going to get almost full recovery in that 85 to 90% of ATP-PC recovery. But then full recovery is going to occur at about 3 total minutes. And you're going to get that last 10% in that, you know, 1 to 3 minute range. And the reason why you'd want to rest longer for specific strength and power adaptations is to give your body a full recovery in order to promote the strongest possible or the biggest possible effort towards a movement, which is important for maximal strength and power training. Good, clicking over to slide 22, more about the rest interval. So muscular endurance and stabilization, or phase 1, phase 2, is best developed with relatively short rest periods, which are generally 0 to 90 seconds. I want you to know that, that's 0 to 90 seconds. Hypertrophy is best achieved in a shorter rest period as well, ranging from 0 to 60 seconds. And that's to create a metabolic effect for muscular growth. And specifically, you want to keep the rest range as short while working out the same muscle group. Good. Maximal strength adaptations are best achieved with relatively long rest periods. And this is going to be important to know for the test, because 3 to 5 minutes is going to be an important rest period to know for phase 4, or maximal strength training. And then power is as well 3 to 5 minutes, because you want that full replenishment of ATP-CP in order to promote the best, biggest possible effort. Good. Clicking over to slide 23. Next, we have training volume. So training volume with NASM gets a little bit tricky to understand, but I try to make it as easy as possible here. So it's, I want you to know the definition, which is the total amount of work performed within a specified time period. All right. So volume can be calculated by multiplying the total number of repetitions in a workout by the loads lifted. All right. So if we have 3 sets of 10 reps at 135 pounds, we have 3 sets times 10 reps, that's going to be 30 total reps, times that 135 pounds, which is going to be 4,050 pounds lifted. That's one way that you can calculate total volume. And it's important to understand that, you know, in order to progress each week of your training program, you want to make sure that you're increasing that volume somehow, whether it be increasing the number of sets, increasing the number of reps, or increasing the load. So every week you should be lifting a total volume higher than you did the week before. That's for increasing muscle mass and increasing strength or increasing power. So this method is typically done for goals like hypertrophy, like I mentioned before. Clicking over to slide 24, training volume is going to be inversely related to training intensity. If you try to go as hard as you possibly can, you aren't going to be able to go for very long, and vice versa. If you train very short, you can probably go for a long period of time. So NASM says you cannot safely perform high volumes of high intensity exercises. So training phase and goal dictate the total volume. The chart below just lists a little bit about each type of volume. High volume is going to be increased muscle cross-sectional area, or increased muscle hypertrophy. Improved blood lipid serum profile, or increased testosterone, decreased cholesterol, decreased cortisol, or a negative hormone, or a fat-increasing hormone, stress hormone, I should say, and increased metabolic rate, meaning more muscle, a higher caloric burn per day, or a higher caloric output per day. A low-volume training is increased rate of force production, like a power sort of training type of program, increased motor unit recruitment, like what you need for strength, and increase motor unit synchronization. So this is going to be low volume but high intensity, and then high volume and low intensity are the how you do determine your training programs. And high volume, low intensity is going to be more like the hypertrophy or in-muscle endurance phases, and low volume, high intensity is going to be more like that phase 4, phase 5, or strength and power, max strength and power. Clicking over to slide 25, next we have training frequency. So training frequency is going to be the number of sessions done in a week, and that's pretty dang simple to understand. But typically, you know, you will be affected as far as our factors of training sessions per week are determined by your age, by your goals, your health, your work capacity, your nutrition, your recoverability, and lifestyle and other stressors. If you're really stressed and you're really old or you're older, you're typically not going to be able to perform as many training sessions per week because your recoverability is going to be very, very low and you're going to be putting yourself at risk for injury. If you're, you know, 18 years old and in your prime, you can obviously train a lot more than you can when you're 55, 65 years old and have a hard time recovering from a workout. All right, clicking over to slide 26, training frequency. Optimum training frequency for improvements in strength and hypertrophy are typically going to be about 3 to 5 times per week. At least 1 to 2 times a week is going to be sufficient for maintaining your current state of fitness. And typically, if a client ever comes up to me and says, oh, I just really want to, you know, improve my health and maintain my muscle mass and that sort of thing, 2 times a week is going to be totally fine to train with them. But if they say, you know, I want to get leaner and I want to gain muscle, I'm definitely going to push that 3 to 5 times or 3 to 4 times per week for sure. Clicking over to slide 27, we have training duration. So training duration is going to be the time frame from the start of the workout to the finish of, the completion of the workout. And typically you aren't going to really train for much more than an hour to 90 minutes. And that's excluding the warm-up and cool-down. So you aren't going to be lifting weights straight for 60 to 90 minutes or more. Yeah, you aren't really going to be doing more than that. Because once you get beyond 90 minutes, you're typically going to have decreased energy levels, decreased hormonal profile, and nothing really good comes from overtraining in one session. All right, looking over to slide 28, exercise selection. So it's important to understand with exercise selection that different goals are going to determine different exercises. In stabilization, you're going to want to create an unstable surface with that's going to challenge their proprioception and challenge their balance. In strength, you're going to want to create a stable surface that isolates or emphasizes the use of the particular muscle group you're trying to strengthen. And then in power, you're going to want to do the same, create a stable environment that you can explode upon from. So definitely keep that in mind as you program. You know, if you want to get better at coordination and stabilization, you know, create a nice unstable surface that you can work from. Good. Clicking over to slide 29, exercise selection examples. So we have a test question coming from the top of this, and it is recommended for a new client in stabilization to keep the total number of exercises per body part limited to 1 to 2 exercises per, we'll say muscle group, or yeah, per body part. And that's going to be important to understand because you don't want to overtrain your new clients. And that's really important because NASM really wants you to understand that with new clients, you never go push them too far. So the exercise selection examples are just an idea of what you can do for stabilization, strength, and power, and you can go ahead and read through that on your own. All right, looking over to slide 30, exercise selection. So progress in a systematic fashion by following the progression continuum. Note the lower body progression continuum. NASM will quiz you on the lower body progression continuum, which is going to be that middle column right there. So looking at that, for stabilization continuum to improve or to progress stabilization, you obviously want to go from a stable surface to a more unstable surface. And that's where you get the floor to sport beam to half a foam roll to foam pad to balance disc to wobble board to BOSU ball. And within that, you also have the lower body progression continuum. You can do two legs side by side. You can do staggered stance side by side, or 1 foot forward, 1 foot in the back. You can do a single leg, and then you make all of those unstable. Good. And then the upper body, you can go two arms at a time, like two arm bicep curl. Then you can do alternating arms, which makes it a little harder. Then you can go single arm, and then you can go single arm with trunk rotation, which nobody typically does. But clicking over to slide 31,